for example, over in 2 John in verse 8, watch yourselves that you do not lose heart, or you do not lose what we have accomplished, but you will receive a full reward. Revelation 3 verse 11, I am coming quickly, hold fast to what you have, so no one will take your crown. Not your salvation. That's a done deal. Your crown. 1 Corinthians 3 verse 15, David read the verses earlier, if any man's work is burned up, he will suffer loss. But he himself will be saved, yet is through fire. I mean, some people are going to get before the Bema Seat judgment of Christ, and they're saved, and they're going to heaven, but they can smell the smoke on their garments because they wasted their life in Christ. And their works go through this fire to test their quality, and they're carnal, and they're consumed. I mean, this is the whole point of the warning that Paul is giving here. Again, he's not threatening them that you're not going to heaven. He's saying you're not going to fare favorably at the judgment seat or the Bema Seat judgment of Christ. Now, a lot of people have this sort of mentality, you know, crowns, schmounds, you know, I don't really care about crowns. I have a lot of people tell me that. All I care about is getting to heaven. Well, let me ask you something. What exactly do we do with our crowns? Do I kind of strut around heaven and say, look, I've got three jewels in mine and you only have two? Revelation 4, verses 10 and 11 talks about the 24 elders, who I think is the church, and they will cast their crowns before the throne. Now, here's the way I used to think of it. It was a one-time deal. But if you study Revelation 4 and Revelation 5, what it says is when the Lamb is worshipped, they cast their crowns before Him. Do you think He's going to be worshipped just one time? I think every time He's worshipped, you have an ability to take your crown and cast it at His feet. To pay Him back? You can't pay Him back. But rather out of worship and gratitude. It reminds me of Mary, who was so overwhelmed at what Christ did for her that according to John 12, verse 3, she took a pound of costly perfume and pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped His feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. Why did she do that? Because Jesus says, those who have been, for this reason I say to you, her sins, which are many, have been forgiven, for she loved much. He who is forgiven little loves little. That's why a crown should be of interest to you. Because it's some sort of capacity to glorify God throughout all eternity. Some believers apparently have a higher degree or a higher ability to do that than other believers. And wouldn't it be sort of embarrassing as all of us are casting our crowns before the Lord over and over again, and they come to you or they come to me and there's nothing in your hands? 1 John 2 verse 28 says, now little children, abide in Him so that when He appears we may have confidence and not shrink away from Him in shame at His coming. All of the time when I'm tempted to make a bad decision and I have the same sin nature you have and go back to the flesh, I think about that verse. How what I'm doing is not necessarily disqualifying my eternity, but it's inhibiting my rewards. And it's inhibiting my ability to glorify God throughout the eons of time. That's why a crown's of interest. So this mentality, I don't care about crowns. Number one, God tells us about crowns. And number two, we need to understand what those crowns are for. They're instruments of glorification. So gaining a crown should be of great interest to you as a Christian. This takes us to question number five. Question number five. What is this judgment analogized to? And I believe that the Apostle Paul analogizes this judgment to three things. so we can sort of understand it a little bit better. Number one, he analogizes it to an athletic contest. And remember I told you a little earlier that Corinth was located on an isthmus, a land bridge. And what we know from Greco-Roman times is that was a place called for the Isthmian Games, kind of a precursor to modern-day Olympics, if you will. And I think Paul was a sports fan. I really do. I think if Paul were here, he'd be watching ESPN and all these sporting activities, because he was aware of the Isthmian Games, and he uses it as an analogy to explain to them this future judgment seat of rewards. And this is what he says. You might want to slip over to 1 Corinthians 9, verses 24 through 27. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable wreath. Therefore, run in such a way as not without aim. I box, an analogy here, boxing. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave so that after I preach to others, I may be disqualified from the prize. People say, well, the prize is salvation. No, it's not. If the prize is salvation, Paul just taught salvation by works right here, didn't he? He would have contradicted everything he ever said. The prize is not salvation. The prize is a favorable ruling at the Bema Seat judgment of Christ. And he says, just like in the Olympics, you have to discipline yourself to be a good athlete. I can't go to McDonald's at 1 o'clock in the morning and pig out on all the food over there. I've got to eat right. I've got to get enough rest. I've got to do the training. And he says, in the Olympics or the Isthmian Games, only one person wins. There's only one gold medal winner. But not so here. All of us have the potential of gaining the gold. And by the way, when you get your reward, what kind of reward or wreath is it? Is it perishable or imperishable? It's imperishable. You know, when I was a basketball player in a former life, I was so proud of my trophies. And there they are on my wall at home in my office. And they're so faded that my 13-year-old daughter can't even recognize who it is on the trophy. She actually said, "Who is that there, Daddy?" And I was about, 80 pounds lighter then. And it's interesting that the things that we strive for, they just fade. But what Paul says is you can gain a crown that will never fade, that's imperishable. And so the first thing that this is analogized to is an athletic contest. Second truth that this is analogized to is a stewardship. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2 says, "In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found," what? Trustworthy. What's a steward? Is a steward an owner? No, the owner's somebody else. A steward is someone that manages something on behalf of the owner. God is the owner. And what we have been given by God, we're to manage on His behalf. And just as an owner calls the steward to an account of what he has been given, God is going to call all of us to an account for what we have been given in Him. A stewardship. There are three things everybody in this room has. Because you might be saying to yourself, "I don't have anything from God." Yes, you do. Every person here has got three things. They all start with the letter T. Number one, you've got time. Number two, you've got treasure of some kind. And number three, you've got talent of some kind given to you from God. I don't know of everybody's story in here, but the reality of the situation is there are things that you are able to do that nobody else in this room can do. And those are God-given talents, perhaps spiritual gifts. And one of these days the Lord's going to say, what did you do with those three T's? And that ascertains or determines reward. So this is analogized to a stewardship.